Humanitarian Radio with your hosts, Tony St. Tone and Janie Beauclair.
Good afternoon and welcome to another edition of Humanitarian Radio. I'm your host, Tony St. Tone. Janie cannot be with you today or with us today. She is in China with a client of hers in Hong Kong and Beijing. Apparently, she's flying all over the place. So we have a great show for you today with Donna Madolvin. She's a really good friend of mine. So we're going to get right into it right after this quick commercial break. Positive affirmation wrapped in pop rock song.
Give me that best case scenario.
It's motivational musician. Check out his latest live show, The Rise Up Experience. At www.sainttone.com.
Mama said we can always hug it out.
Pick up his latest CD, Outside the Box, available on iTunes.
We choose to enter.
For music with a positive message, check out sainttone.com. Hey, and welcome back. Again, we are here with Donna Madolvin. She is a spiritual teacher, a musician, an author, a film producer, a world traveler, a philanthropist. She just encompasses everything about spirituality that you can imagine. So, Donna, welcome to Humanitarian Radio. How are you?
Hey, great, Tony. Thank you so much for having me. This is so exciting for me.
Yeah, well, you know, I've been wanting to interview you for a while, and I just want our listeners to know that I met Donna probably about, God, is it like 14 years ago, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
You know, something like that. It's definitely about 14 or at least 11 or 12 years ago. While I was living in Tampa, Florida, Donna had a angel gift shop, I would think you would call it, and I just wandered in one day, and that was that. From that point
on.
Yeah,
we were right next to Sam Ash, conveniently, so
yeah.
I got a lot of musicians wandering in, you know, wanting to know what was going on in that angel store. So.
Exactly, you know, and I think I was definitely one of those guys that I was at Sam Ash Music Store, and I kept looking in your window going, what's going on with this place? And curiosity drew me in there. And, God, since then, you know, Don and I have been around the world. We've gone to Costa Rica, and we've done a bunch of different shows together. And so let me ask you this right off the bat so that way our listeners can get a better feel of who you are. Who is Donna? What got you started in this spiritual path that you're currently in?
Well, I think like a lot of people, it was intense suffering, you know. That was like the straw that was breaking the camel's back, so to speak, of, you know, feeling like the world just wasn't, I didn't belong here or something. You know, like I had all these ideas of love and unity and joining and, you know, and it just wasn't, I wasn't seeing that in my environment. I wasn't seeing that in the world at that time. And, you know, I came up through a childhood with a lot of abuse and dysfunction and blah, 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 like a lot of people do. And I just, you know, I was very confused about what it meant to live in this world and how one could actually live in this world with so much, what I felt was so much love inside of me that was trying so hard to get out. But it just kept landing in the wrong places, like I guess like the song Looking for Love in All the Wrong Places. You know, I wasn't sure of where to find exactly what it was I was looking for. And
right.
So probably, yeah, after the end of a relationship that I had thought was going to be it for me, you know, ended in this horrible way, I just sort of said, okay, God, I just opened up one night and said, you know, I don't know what I'm doing wrong. I don't know why I'm here. I need help. And if you don't help me, I don't think I can keep going. I mean, I was just like literally at the end of my rope. And that was my first spiritual experience. I mean, I actually got an impartation from God that said, oh, my sweet child, I got a lot to show you, but you need to open up. You know, you need to stop deciding which way the river is going to flow and let me show you the way, because all that love that you have and all that love that's dying to get out of you is there, and it's me, and you need to just let me run the show so that you can learn you know, what it is exactly that you're here to do.
Were you religious prior to that? Like, were you?
No. I would say I was not religious in any sort of formal sense. But okay. Like I said, I mean, I just had this like seed of love. That's all I can describe it. This deep, deep, deep feeling of love and gratitude that I could never shake, but didn't know what to do with, and kept, like I said, kind of throwing it in the wrong directions in my life, and then wondering why they weren't sprouting roots, why all these seeds were falling on rocks, so to speak. You know, it's just because I was looking for in the wrong places, you know. And so, no, I didn't have any formal spirituality, and so that kept me extremely open, I would say, mm-hmm. to, look, I'm just tired of all this suffering. You show me what to do, and I'll do it, because this is it. I'm cooked, you know. I'm done trying to figure this life out. So.
So what would you say? Obviously, so you got this awakening, if you will, that you were going to let go and let God, and sort of just surrender to whatever I need to do. Let me know what I need to do. What did you start doing from that point forward? Like, is that where you started getting into opening up your shop, your angel shop?
That started me down a path of, okay, if God, what God said to me was that what you desire, what you need is within you. You need to look within to discover it, right, instead of looking outside. And I had a series of profound dreams after that that was very much along the same vein of, you know, stop looking in the sand for what you need, start looking up. So so I started just buying books. You know, it started with, like, you know, the Conversations with God series. And then suddenly somebody showed up at my doorstep one day. Ironically, the guy that I had been pining over, you know, when the relationship ended, showed up on my doorstep one day with Course in Miracles and said, I was out west and I got a copy of this book and I thought of you. And he gave it to me and just walked off, you know, into the sunset again. And that really started my path of deeply going within, because there was so much things that I had not looked at, things I didn't know, you know, a lot of suffering that I was creating for myself, which I had no idea I was the author of that suffering.
Right.
And it was showing me, you know, step by step that, no, you're in charge of this suffering. You're the one that's creating it. So it's okay. You're innocent. You didn't know you were doing this. So let's start from scratch now. And let's look at that suffering, and let's see how you're creating it so that you can stop doing that, you know?
Isn't that started
a 10-year, yeah.
Isn't it interesting that, you know, you had a book that helped you go down your spiritual path, and I did also. Mine was also Conversations with God. I was told about the book 3 years prior to it, and I wasn't ready for it. And then 3 years later, I wound up in a library, which I never go, and I ended up in a section that had books, and there was the book. I picked it up and never put it down, and that was 14 years ago, and it was amazing because when I read that book, it changed everything for me as far as my belief system. So, you know, these books are out there, and it's interesting that this gentleman came along and just handed you a book and goes, here, I thought of you, and it resonated with you, and hence it moved you forward, you know? So I think when you ask, it comes to you, you know, you don't know where it's going to come from. It's just like, just be open to it.
Yeah. I think that's the key there, Tony, is that, you know, once we decide that we don't know what our own best interest is, and a lot of people are running around out there trying to figure out life from the standpoint of thinking that they know what's best for them. But once you get to the point where you realize, man, I don't know what's in my own best interest. Please help me. Then you become receptive. Then you become open. And, you know, it's like the old saying, you know, you can't fill a cup that's already full. You know, if your mind is already full with what you think you want and how to get it and how you're going to go about, you know, making happiness for yourself, if you're sure you know the answer to that question and you're out there just trying it on your own, you know, you're not open. You're not receptive. Something that could be completely radically different from anything you ever experienced before. And that's when my life took like this major, major turn from, you know, really just interested in maybe financial success, maybe having, you know, some kind of romantic relationship that was going to complete me or whatever. And the funny thing is that once you kind of drop your own ideas about how things are going to work and you open up to the spirit's idea of how things are going to work, all those things can actually come back to you, but they come back purified, and they come back in a way that's actually sustainable and fulfilling, you know?
Yeah.
Like Jesus, you know, the kingdom of heaven is within, and so once you kind of realize that, yeah, maybe I don't know what's in my own best interest, you know, seek first that which is within, and everything else will come. And that's just exactly how it works. You know,
yeah.
We have to kind of give up our own ideas about things, which is hard, you know?
Well, it's extremely hard because you think, well, I think I know what I want, and sometimes you don't even realize that you've already put a limitation on yourself. It's like, hey, I was going to give you $100, but if all you're seeking is a dollar, okay, then
exactly.
Here's your dollar.
Bingo, man.
It's like,
bingo.
Oh, you were going to give me $100? It's like, I was actually going to give you $1 million, but if you got your
yeah.
blinders on to a dollar, here's your buck. I
yeah,
didn't know.
The Course in Miracles has a sign, a very famous line that says, you know, you don't seek for too much. You actually seek for far too little, you know? And that's true. You know, when we're just interested in our own life, and you know, just like this radio show that you're doing, you know, it's obviously you're trying to reach out to people that are doing good things in the world. It's because that's part of how you give, right?
Right.
And it's like giving and receiving are the same. So when you finally open up, you have to get past your own garbage first. That's the thing. You got to go through your own garbage. Once you've gone through your own, you know, limitations and self-doubts and self-deprecating ways that you treat yourself and ultimately treat others. Once you get past that and you say, oh, my gosh, you know, I can clear this out of my heart, and then, you know, you're able to see things in a way that you never saw before. Things will come into your life that you never could have expected. You know, the joy that has just been flooding into my life has just been, I mean, I could have never met, I mean, Eckhart Tolle asked me to be on his show, his Eckhart Tolle TV show. Like, how could I have ever imagined something like that ever happening?
Right.
You know?
Right.
How could I have ever imagined, you know, my current being partner, you know, we're just so well meshed with each other and creating such fun music and great music and stuff. Like, I never could have imagined my doing that 3 to 5 years ago. Even, you know?
No, because you were thinking within a limited mind and within a limited circumstances,
exactly.
Saying...
I thought I knew what I wanted. Hello.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, we all think we know what we want, and I think that's good. I think it's better to have an idea of what you'd like than as opposed to, you know, I always say we're a ship in the middle of the ocean, and some people like to grab the rudder and grab the sail and go, that's where I want to go. And other people just sit there and react to the weather. And the weather just shifts them right, left, up, and down, and you know they go with it. So it's my thought is like, well, if you have an idea where you want to go, chances are you'll get there a lot quicker as opposed to having absolutely no idea.
And I think the important part of that, Tony, and this is where what I had to come to understand is that you need to know where you want to go, but not in the form specific so much. So in other words, if I feel like, you know what I really want. If I really boil everything down to what I really want, it's love and peace and joining and happiness, right?
Yes.
Like, everybody could boil it down to just love and peace and joining and happiness.
Yes.
And if we boil it down to that and then we say, okay, show me how I – and keep that torch lit, that torch of love and peace and joining and happiness. Keep that torch lit and say, okay, now, Spirit, show me the quickest, fastest way to achieve that which I really want, because we know money's not it, Tony. We know even success is not it. If it's hollow and it's not filled with joy and peace of, you know, joining and giving and all that, then you could have every financial thing you ever wanted. You could have all your goals in the external world met, but you could still at the end of the day go home and want to put a bullet in your head.
Yeah,
I mean,
well,
we know this is true,
it's
right?
A great scenario where people go, hey, I was that guy in the big empty castle on the hill. It's like,
yeah,
I have an
exactly.
External look of like, wow, this guy looks so successful, but internally they got no one to share it with. I mean, I don't know why this is coming to, but Michael Jackson was a perfect example. It's like he just wanted people
yeah.
to hang out with
yeah.
that he liked that weren't out for something, and he found that within kids. Like, kids aren't really trying to get something from it because they don't know I'm worth billions of dollars. They just know that I'm a
right.
nice guy. So he loved that innocence where everyone else is like, why am I get something from Mike? I got to get something from Mike. So...
right, yeah.
And I do agree with you 100%.
So that's where the letting go kind of comes from, and I think that's where the spiritual journey really kicks in full swing, is when you're when you're really open, you're finally open to the universe and just like, show me the way, you know, and then you have the opportunities to experience things that, you know, that you hadn't been able to experience before. And also, I think it's really important to mention that, you know, that there's a giving aspect that, you know, so often in our culture, it's all about getting, right? And so we think in happiness terms, we think, yeah, if I just get enough, I'll be happy. Where it's actually the opposite. It's like when you start giving, that's when you start to find your joy and your happiness, you know?
Yeah.
And I've just had so many volunteer experiences and, you know, experiences and, you know, going to Costa Rica, going to India, bringing, you know, humanitarian aids, you know, and things like that with me, even if it was just a suitcase, you know, that makes a huge difference in a child's life that doesn't have a pair of shoes or doesn't have a pencil and paper to use at school, you know, to be able to hand these things over and go, here you go, and watch their faces light up, you know, or like with music. I mean, you and I both have that experience now where you know when you're touching somebody in their heart, and that's a giving. When you're on stage, Tony, you are giving, man. Like, you are in total giving mode. And that giving is the high that comes, you know, that's the love that's flowing through you, and that's being experienced as kind of like a oneness that you're having with your audience. You know, there's a shared experience there.
Yeah.
And, you know, and that's it, man. You know, that's what I've come to understand is that all those years of you know, I was really wanting to, more than anything, was just to give. And now I'm starting to do that more and more and more and not worry so much about how I'm going to be taken care of, because I am being taken care of. You know, it's just happening. And
well, you know, you hit on it earlier when you just said if you choose happiness as opposed to a new car or a nice place to live, if you just choose happiness, then the things that bring happiness to you could be a car, a house, a check, a relationship, a puppy. It could be a number of things, because you're boiling it down, like you said, to the most basic thing. And happiness could be as simple as, wow, I'm on a long walk and I could really use a glass of water. And that, it's like, normally you would never be like, well, I need a glass of water. It's like, no, that's what brings me happiness. I really would love to have a glass of water right now. And boom, it's choosing that simple thing, like you said, happiness or love, that the universe can bring you so many different ways to experience that aren't necessarily materialistic. And if you keep that in mind and in the forefront, then you're choosing the ultimate things, going, yeah, I just want to have love. I just want to be happy. It's like, okay, well, now what's going to make you happy? Well, it's a number of things depending on the situation. So now in any situation, if you're still choosing happiness, you could be in a storm and be happy because you're protected in your car. Or you could be on vacation, you know, in a situation where normally everyone else is upset, but you're still happy because it's raining. You're like, I'm still happy because I've chosen to be happy.
Yeah, and that's the bottom line, I mean, of everything, because, you know, when we've gone through the external, you know, just trying to seek happiness in the external without ever turning around and looking in the mirror and go, okay, what is it I really, you know, boiling it down to what I really want, then, you know, then get sort of like turning the reins over to the universe and saying, okay, you know better than I do. There's a humbling thing there that has to happen. And saying to the universe, you know better than I do, you know, I'm on board now, so just let's do this, you know?
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden all these doors start to open up that never could have opened up before. You know, and creatively that really sparks, you know, this creative impulse that we all carry within us that looks so far outside the box, you know, just like your CD says, you know, outside the box. It looks so far outside the box because that creative wellspring that's within all of us, you know, when we take the shackles off finally and just go, okay, show me the way, then this creative force can flow through you and bring things to you that, you know, you never even thought was possible. I mean, I wasn't even singing 3 years ago, Tony.
I know, which amazes me.
Right. Because I had this idea in my mind. It was a barrier that said, you're not good enough. And so even though I hung around all you and all your musician friends, and we did all those concerts and things, and I, you know, I did some things. It was great, but I was just still too, I believed something that wasn't true about myself, which was that I wasn't good enough.
Yeah.
And so now, you know, I'm writing songs with my music partner, Rod, like every month we're writing new songs, we're doing all kinds of concerts, we're, you know, sharing in all kinds of different ways. I mean, I was on that fasting tour out in California recently where, you know, we were just playing guitar and singing to these small groups and just toured, you know, Vancouver down to Hollywood, just sharing music and love and peace and joy. And, you know, it's like the mind just boggles at the, you know, at how opening up like that, you know, and really asking for help can just completely shift the course of your life.
Well, you know, again, if someone were to tell you 3 years ago, like, hey, you're going to actually be touring around as a musician and you're going to be doing this and that, you're gonna be like, not me. You're crazy. So
yeah.
I think it's awesome. Now, you just recently came from a show you did in Utah. And tell us a little bit about that, because I'm sure our listeners would love to hear more about what you did there.
Yeah, I have a friend, a really good friend, Laura Chopin, and she's an amazing singer-songwriter. And she writes really deep. I mean, I always say this. If you could get one of her songs 100% totally, you could find spiritual enlightenment in a song, because she's clear and writes such beautiful work. And, you know, she had an opportunity to do something for an organization called Heart and Soul, which is kind of like a hospice, but not for dying people. You know, they go into places where people maybe can't get out. Maybe it is a hospice, but it might also be a halfway house, or it might be, you know, a retirement community or something where people are shut-ins kind of in a way, and they can't get out. And, you know, you become a part of that organization and put on concerts and just bring your music and your love and your stories about, you know, your life, and just bring it and share, you know. And I know, you know, you've done a lot of work with, like, prisons and women's groups and things like that. And you know, I mean, there's just nothing better than to share, number one, a gift that's been given to you, okay, but also with people who maybe are really hungry for that.
Yes, they're like a sponge.
It's lovely to play the club. It's lovely. I mean, all those things are great, and I love them. But there's something really special about bringing music into a place where people are really hungry for it, because they're at a real crossroads in their life. You know, it might be that they're going to be passing soon, or it might be that they're never going to be able to have a life out of this place. And to bring that into them and share it, it's just wonderful, you know?
I got to say, you know, in the experiences that I've had in doing shows similar to that, there's no better high than doing a show. If it's, you know, if I've done shows when I was in Kuwait in a place called Tent City, and there's 600 troops out there, and they're losing their mind because there's a rock band performing for them. And the appreciation that we got back was just overwhelming, because they so needed it. And when we've done shows at the jails, it's the same thing. Like, they so much needed it. And these are the places that not everyone wants to go, and so they barely ever get people to go in and share their talent. And that's where they need it most. And I've told people about this, because when I've done my USO tours, I've been to a lot of really cool places like Italy, Greece, and Spain, and Japan, and et cetera. But the places that needed it the most and that were the most receptive were, it was like the Middle East, where we went to Turkey and Bahrain and Saudi Arabia, because these are places where the troops didn't have access to a lot of stuff going on outside the base. So, and like this one place in Kuwait, they're in Tent City. What that meant was you're driving like 30 miles out into a desert and you're setting up tents. And that's where you're going to live for the next 3 or 4 or 6 months. I mean, there is like nothing there. So to have us go out there and set up on a flatbed truck and play to 600 troops, you would have thought Van Halen showed up and played for them. You know, that's how excited they were.
No, I hear you. I hear you. And it again, Tony, and, you know, your thrill about that's not coming because you're out there, you know, wanting to get something from anybody. You're there to give, you know, and that giving and receiving, you know, happens, you know, simultaneously. It's like it just builds up this beautiful energy between you and your audience, because you're really there because you want to share, you know, your talents and share your gifts. And yeah, that there's just nothing more satisfying than that, you know. Even if you end up getting something in return, check or whatever it is, it pales in comparison. The check is nice. Not wrong with it, but it pales in comparison to that moment that you're there in that special place and you're really sharing with these people. You know, there's, like you said, there's nothing else more important, I think, in life than to really find your niche and how you can give back to the world, you know?
Yeah, and I'd love to share that type of message with our listeners, because a lot of times they're not sure, well, what could I do and where could I go? And I remember listening to Tony Robbins. He spoke about his 5-year-old son. And his grandmother had just shown up at the house with, you know, like 10 balloons and gave it to his 5-year-old. Now, the 5-year-old was thrilled. He was like, you know, just it wasn't his birthday or anything. Grandma just showed up with some balloons for the 5-year-old. The 5-year-old is so ecstatic. He's like, look, I got balloons. And what Tony Robbins did with his son, which I thought was amazing, he goes, listen, you can keep all those balloons, or we can go down to a senior citizen home and you can share those balloons with someone else. And he said, I sort of told him that what I would have really liked him to do, but I let the choice be his. So he agreed to go down to a senior citizen home, and one by one, they walked in and just gave these old people, these strangers, balloons. And of course, every time he gave a little old lady a balloon, he got hugs and kisses and so much affection back that he learned that giving was receiving also, because he had already gotten a chance to receive. Now he got a chance to give. And I always remember that story so in the front of my mind, because at 5 years old, he was taught that. And I was like, wow, that is so cool to teach a 5-year-old how to do something like that.
And actually, when I was on the Eckhart Tolle show, I mean, that was, like, I think one of, like, the main themes of what I was sharing with, because the subject was parenting with presence.
Yes.
And that's why I was chosen to be on the show, was because I had this experience with my own daughter about this sort of selfless love parenting. And it's pretty radical, really, from the world's perspective, because, you know, when you're giving in that way, you know, when it comes to our children, there's an awful lot of selflessness in giving that you have opportunities with them as well. And like my daughter is, you know, she's going to be 17 this month. And
oh, my God.
And she,
that's so crazy.
Yeah, I know, right? And she's becoming an artist. And the only reason that she's able to hone her craft as an artist is because for all the years that she was, you know, in grade school and elementary school, you know, when she was having trouble with certain subjects and stuff, mommy didn't force the river and say, oh, you've got to, you know, you've got to hunker down and be really good at all these subjects that aren't really particularly interested to you. You know, I was able to get her through those things as best we could, but giving her time to hone her craft as an artist, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And here she is, you know, going to be going to USF, you know, in a year and a half or whatever, and fine arts program. And, you know, she's able to, like, learn a whole new level of being able to express herself, to be able to give, because I didn't decide for her what was best for her, because I knew I didn't know. I mean, I'm lucky if I knew what was best for me. At some point, I just had to say, Spirit, take over, because, you know, I have to let my daughter kind of run the show for what's natural for her.
That's awesome.
Oh, yeah. So, and you know her. She's just one of the sweetest, most loving people you ever meet in your life. Because I didn't put a lot of expectations on her. I said, okay, you tell me what you really feel in your heart, and let's do that. You know, it doesn't matter if I see it differently. It's not my life. You know, you came through me, but you're not mine. You know, you're a child of the universe. And so she's always known that she has been respected and honored, even when her, you know, approach to things was different from mine.
Well,
you know, and now I have results.
Congratulations to you also in not being pressured by society to say, well, she has to do this and she has to do that, because I can totally relate.
It was hard.
Yeah,
it
well, because I can relate to her.
I got very little support. support, Tony. I got very little support.
I know you did, because, and I can relate to her because I went to school for graphic design, and as far as a student, I didn't care for school. I didn't care for about algebra or math or history or science. I wanted to draw. That's what I wanted to do. And you know, I ended up going to an art college and graduated with a bachelor's for graphic design work, which I continue to do this day. But, you know, it's really tough.
Yeah, the Dalai Lama is very vocal about this particular subject, too, because that's what, you know, Eckhart Tolle was also very vocal about the subject that, you know, that children have gifts, and we cover those gifts up with the normal way that schools are run, you know?
Because they don't know better.
Yeah, they don't know that, and we don't give them enough time to be, you know, it's always due, you know? But there has to be a balance. You have to have a balance, because creativity and your real gifts come from both doing and being, you know, giving a child a chance to just be without expectations and, you know, ridiculously long lists of chores that they have to do, and, you know, to give them that chance to be, that allows them to do then what is coming through that creative channel that you're allowing to happen. And, you know, and if the world's ever going to change, and, you know, whether it does or it doesn't, is not going to affect my peace and joy and happiness, because I know it's an inward journey. But if it is ever going to change, then it's going to start with the way that we raise our kids and the way that we allow them to be educated, and to allow them their creative impulses, their inner problem solving skills, to come out of a deeper place than just something that they read in a book. And because, you know, the problems that we have to face in this world aren't going to be solved from reading a book. You know, it's going to come from a very deep place of creative problem solving, you know, like the University for Peace in Costa Rica that we visited and did that concert at. You know, those kids are thinking outside the box big time.
Totally. And you know, it reminds me of our guest that we had last week, Tanya Jobson. She has written a number of books on parenting from a spiritual perspective, and a lot of things that you had just mentioned, she was speaking of, you know, how kids can pick up on your intuitiveness of what you're bringing to the table and what they're bringing to the table and allowing them to be who they want to be. And, you know, again, props to you for not caving in to what everyone else thinks is normal. And so they think, well, everyone else has done it, so we should do it, and your daughter should do it because I went to school and did this, and so she should learn algebra too. You're like, yeah, but that's not who she is. Everyone's an individual, and unfortunately, society wants to put everyone in little boxes because that's the only way they know how to deal with them. They put them all in these little boxes, and they all do the same exact thing, and some do them well, and some do them don't.
And they want them to you know, support the status quo. You know, that's really what it's all about. And if we're going to change the world, you know, in any way that's more friendly to our human side, you know, then it's going to have to come from, you know, thinking outside of the box and finding creative solutions for some of the major challenges that we're facing as a planet, you know.
Totally.
So,
totally.
Yeah.
Letting
them find their own center, that's really what it's all about.
Yeah, and you know, like I said, I think you did an excellent job in raising Amanda and letting her just be who she wants to be.
Yep.
Let's go and talk a little bit about the movie that you made. I know you made it a couple of years ago, but I think it's real important. It was a documentary that you just one day decided that you wanted to make this documentary, What Peace Means to Me, and I love the fact that you had this idea, had never made a movie before, never imagined yourself being a film producer, director, or whatever you would like to give a title to, and yet you made this movie, and it won an award. So let's just talk a little bit about that. What inspired you, and how did you get started? And I'd like other people to really understand that you came to this, or this came to you out of nowhere, and you followed it through. That's what I love about it. It's not like you were a Steven Spielberg wannabe. You're like, no, I just had this idea, and I thought, well,
let me grab a camera and let me start filming. Simple as that.
When I quit my job at the hospital and decided to follow my spiritual, you know, path, and opened that spiritual bookstore, you know, the Angel Store, I just had decided at that point that I was just going to let spirit lead the way. And again, we go back to that whole when you finally give up, you know, trying to hold the reins on your own life and just boil it down to what's important, things can open up for you that you never imagined possible. And mm-hmm. I don't remember exactly where the inspiration came initially, except that I thought, man, I would just be really curious what people think. If we just walked up to a random person on the street and handed them a microphone and said, hey, what does peace mean to you? You know, what does love mean to you? You know, what does joy mean to you? And just turn people loose and see what they have to say. And Chris was, you know, your friend Chris, a good cameraman. I said, look, dude, let's just grab your camera, let's get in the car, and let's just drive all around Tampa Bay, let's go to the beach, let's go to the homeless places, let's just interview, you know, Christian ministers and, Unity Church ministers and stuff, and just ask them these questions, you know, see what they have to say. Just out of curiosity. I was just really curious what people thought.
Mm-hmm.
And so we did that. We just kind of went to all these different places, and we were driving down the street, and we saw somebody walking down the street that looked interesting. I'd be like, turn in here, grab the camera, and just run out and interview people. And it was really eye-opening and interesting, just from a standpoint of as a producer, because everybody's opinion about what peace was and how to get peace and how to get love, all those things were different, right? But the thing that was beautiful was that underneath all that was just this desire for it. Like, it's as if we all want the same thing, but we're going about it in 10 million different ways.
Yes. Yeah.
But underneath it all, you know, it's we're all the same. I mean, and that's, I think, what I took from it more than anything, whether you're a homeless guy or a Unity minister or somebody that's been in prison, you know, deep down inside, we're all the same. And that's what I got from it, you know, for my own heart was, wow, you know, this is so beautiful because, you know, we can step out of this idea of looking at each other as, oh, you're going about it the wrong way, but I know how to do it. You don't know how to do it. I know what's right. You're wrong. You just have to step out of that and go, we're all looking for the same thing.
Right.
And,
right.
You know, and that was the beautiful part to me. And all the hugs, you know, all the love that people were able to share. Once they spewed their heart out, you know, whether it was about war or about, you know, whatever the grievances maybe even were that came out, you know, about society and about everything. At the end of every interview, there was this almost like gratitude that they had for somebody cares about what I think. Somebody's sitting there listening to me intensely, asking me questions about the way I feel. And there was like a soul connection that was being made. And it was just, I mean, it was just blowing my mind.
It was very powerful. And I got to say, especially when you approached a lot of the homeless guys that were in Florida, and I remember there was one time there's this one part of the movie that you're talking to the guy and he's picking through the garbage looking for cans, and he still stops and keeps talking to you, and you could see that he really has something to say because you asked him a real question, and it's almost like, wow, society's forgotten about me and sort of thrown me to the side and doesn't say anything to me besides, you know, get out of my way. And here you are asking a really profound question, and you want to know what I think. And I thought that was so
awesome. And it was genuine,
awesome.
Right?
Yes.
Like, it was not contrived. I mean, it was really, I really cared about what they had to say. And, you know, there were days when I'd go home smelling high heaven, you know, from all the hugs from the people that don't have a place to take a shower, you know. But it was the most beautiful smell in the world in some way, because I knew that, you know, we were just making these connections and that, you know, yeah, like people, it's like that, you know, the line in Avatar, I see you. like when you really can see somebody and you're not looking at them from, you know, society's vantage point of, oh, this is a homeless person, he's a loser or something, right?
Right.
Like,
right.
It was never that thought ever in my mind. And some of the things that the homeless people told me were way more profound than something a minister might tell me.
They learned that in a book. Yes, I agree with that 1,000%.
I found it more interesting to hear what the homeless had to say than the ministers, because it just seemed like they were just really passionate about what they wanted to tell you, and they were very excited to tell you. You know, they were sitting there like, look, we really want to share this with you. And they were so excited that you actually asked them, where I'm sure the ministers or the other people that are more part of society are like, well, I get asked these questions all the time. So, and obviously they're already intertwined with society, so people talk to them very often, where a lot of these guys, I'm not sure if they have a lot of people to talk to.
Right. And the genuine nature of it, and I think the love that we felt, you know, during these exchanges, it's just, that's what it's all about, man. You know, it's just all about that connection. And so I think that's probably why it was so well received, was because it was genuine, you know.
Is that movie available anywhere for someone to download or watch it on YouTube or anything like that?
No, but I could do that probably. I still have it. I just haven't.
Yes. At this moment,
I could probably do a YouTube, the whole thing. I've got a clip, like a short clip from YouTube.
Right,
there,
but I think you could
probably do the whole thing.
You could do the whole movie on YouTube, because now there's ways that you can actually do an hour, 2 hours, three
right.
hours. I mean,
right. I don't think we could do that at the time we did it, but
right.
yeah, you're right.
I think you should really do that, because it's such a powerful movie. And let's talk about real quick the award that you won.
Yeah, that was the Tampa Bay Film Festival Award.
You won an award from the Tampa Bay Film Festival, and how exciting was that, the fact that this is you, first-time filmmaker, first-time making a documentary, and you win an award?
It was surreal, you know, because I was just shocked that they even wanted to play it. And, you know, sitting there in that audience and watching people watch that film, you know, was just, you know, it was just surreal. And then to have them choose it as, you know, the best documentary for the year or whatever. I mean, it's just surreal. But again, we go back to that same thing. You know, when you open up to the possibilities of the universe without putting your own agenda on everything, except those core things, you know, this love, happiness, peace, joy, joining kind of thing, you know, the universe can arrange so many things for you that you could never have imagined in your wildest dreams. And I'm just watching it unfold to this day. It just keeps getting unbelievable, you know, the things that are happening and the way things are unfolding in just ways I could have never imagined. So, and they might not look like anything that, you know, I don't have $1 million to donate to some cause. But when you're sitting there across from somebody that can't get out of their apartment and you're singing a song or you're playing at a hospice facility for people who are on, you know, their last few days of life, or, you know, like what you do with the prisons, or, you know, when you're doing those sorts of things, you know that all the money in the world can't give you what you're getting in that moment and what that other person, what the other people are getting in that moment.
Absolutely.
And so, you know, that's what it's all about, man. That's what it's all about. And all of us can do that, Tony. That's the beauty of it. It's like you don't have to do anything huge. And you can, and that's great. And I'm Brad and Angelina, you know, they got the money to do these huge things, and we need people like that.
But you could be the little five-year-old boy that brings balloons. And
exactly.
Actually, you don't
right.
need to bring
and
balloons.
No
you could
excuse.
Just bring a smile.
No, we have no excuse for not sharing our gifts and giving whatever we can. And that might mean, you know, stopping when somebody's got a flat tire. That might mean being kind to somebody at the checkout that's stressed out that day and just offering them a warm embrace. Or, you know, like I got hit the other day. Some lady hit me from behind. And when she got out of her car, she was so frazzled. And the first thing I did was just walk up there and hug her, right? And, which she didn't expect, because it was all her fault. And, you know, her car got messed up and my car got messed up. But I just felt like, oh, this poor person is frazzled and feels bad and guilty about what happened. And I just wanted to let her know. dude, it's okay. You know, things happen, man. And you know me, I don't care about material possessions all that much. It's fine. I'll get it banged out. It's no big deal. And for her to feel that, and for her to just know that she was valued as a person beyond what happened, you know. I mean, these types of things we can do in our everyday life, and they make life rich, and they make it worth living, and they keep us in this constant, you know, of gratitude, joy, that that we can then share whenever we're in a situation that calls for it, because we're constantly being called to share that, you know, that joy and that gratitude.
How often is that?
We have plenty of opportunities.
I just got to comment,
you know?
That the fact that you did that is, I'm sure the woman was just like, you're hugging me? Are you going to, like, body slam me? It's like, no, I'm actually just going to give you a hug, you know? I think that's beautiful that you actually did something like that, because it's...
Yeah, and her whole energy shifted as soon as that happened. I mean, you know, it took a couple minutes, but then she was smiling, and then she was taking her deep breath, you know, just relaxing. You know, just knowing let's face it, every single encounter that we make in this world defines who we are and defines who we think they are. And when you can always come from that place, you know, of just unconditional love, then that's how we change the world, not through, you know, millions of dollars being spent on whatever. I mean, and all those things are great, but honestly, our life is a living example of what we want to see in the world, you know. And like Gandhi said, if you always be the change that you want to see, then you'll always see that change, you know. You'll always see what you give reflected back to you in the world. And
you get what you focus on.
It's taken me a lot of years to figure that out and to get to that place. But it's a joyful ride now, you know.
That is awesome. That is so awesome. So listen, before we go any further, because I we only have a limited time. It's only an hour show. I definitely want to play one of your songs. So just tell me a little bit about your journey as a musician. You sang when you were young, and then you stopped singing, and then you started singing again. So let's just talk about that, because I think there's a lot of people out there that have talent that somehow they just sort of push it aside, and they were either told that they're not good enough or whatever the fact is. But somehow you found the courage later on in life to come back around to it, and now you're embracing it fully and you're doing it. So let's just talk about that, because I think others that are out there listening could really learn something from your experience.
Yeah, well, I grew up in Detroit during a time when there was a lot of racial tensions and stuff, and I'm pretty Anglo, white-looking, long blonde hair, young girl, and living in an area of Detroit which was mostly African American, at a time when things just weren't good between the races, you know. And so there was a lot of tension in my early childhood life, and my family was very dysfunctional, and you know. So my one solace was, you know, I remember being at this convent, this big, huge Detroit, you know, Catholic church, and I would go in there and sing just to hear my voice, because I would sing in these big halls, and you know, it would resonate, and it just sounded so beautiful. So I would just sneak in there and just sing, and one day a nun heard me, and she's like, "Are you with the choir?" And I said, "No." And she says, "Would you need to be? Would you like to be?" I'm like nine, I guess, maybe 8 or 9. And so she took me under her wing, basically, and she started having me sing with the choir, and then she started having me do all the solos, and then she had me start doing just solo stuff for the adult congregation, where she would sit there with these big pipe organs, you know, and I would just sing, you know, to the adult congregation. And I just remember, you know, at that time just feeling like this is what I was born to do. And, you know, then life changed, and my family just got so dysfunctional that we ended up leaving Detroit, and you know, just life happened, you know, and I got very caught up in the negative side of life and a lot of suffering, you know, like I said before, a lot of suffering, and my mother committed suicide, and you know, just it just went crazy, you know, life just kind of went. So I stopped doing what felt natural to me, because I felt like I had to go into survival mode. You know, I was in 10th grade when I was living on my own. So I just didn't feel like I had time, I guess, to do that. And then as time went on, I felt like, well, if I would have been good enough, I would have kept doing it, but maybe I just wasn't good enough, so I stopped. And it wasn't until, you know, I finally just started quieting my mind again and really getting into my spiritual side that I felt this creative impulse coming back. And so I started singing for, actually, a Buddhist temple had me sing for the first time. She heard me singing in the garden, another nun, Buddhist nun this time. She heard me singing in the Zen garden, and she's like, "Why are you singing? Why are you not singing? You need to start a choir," you know. And so I started singing for the Buddhist temple, and it just took off from there, you know. And now it's a huge part of my life, and I'm writing songs with my music partner, Rod, something I never thought I could do, although I've written poetry my whole life, so it's not really that much of a stretch. But so now, you know, we're writing original music, and I'm doing a lot of, you know, like I said, singing in hospices and, you know, where places where I can give back, and creating our own original CDs. And so, yeah, it's just been another way to extend, another way to share the joy, another way to bring people together, another way of extending what's in my deepest heart in a way that, you know, music has a way of sort of lifting you beyond all kinds of different obstacles, you know, and different barriers, where it's just you and the song in the audience. And so, yeah, it's just like the spirit saying, okay, here's your new way of extending, you know?
And expressing yourself. Yeah. So real quickly, because we're real close to the time.
Okay.
Tell me, just give me a brief synopsis about the song that we're about to play.
Okay. Well, it's called Enjoy the Ride. And, I think basically it's a song that I wrote about, look, just relax, you know, love what's going on in your life. Just take the top down, you know, turn the music up and just enjoy the ride, because, you know, life is going to be a series of twists and turns, and you can't determine what's going to come your way. But if your mind and your heart are in the right place, then it doesn't matter what happens in life. You know, you'll always find a way of finding the joy in the moment. So the song was kind of written to, you know, maybe like somebody that you could see has got stress, you know, and it's like, dude, just sit back and enjoy the ride. Let's just enjoy this together. So my music partner, Rod, did all the music parts and wrote the music itself, and then I come later and put on the melodies and the words. So it's definitely a big collaborative effort between the two of us, and a lot of the songs that we write together reflect, you know, the way we feel about each other, the way we feel about life. I just recently wrote a song for my sister that passed away. So it's just another way of expressing, you know, what's in the deepest part, and people really seem to love it, you know. I think that song is number 30 out of, like, 250,000 songs on SoundCloud or something, you know. It's like
that
crazy.
Is awesome. That is awesome.
I know, right? And we just uploaded them, like, it hasn't even been a week, so we'll see where they go. And we're in the process of writing a bunch of new stuff, which is coming out really beautiful. So, yeah, it's about, look, relax, man. It's all taken care of. Enjoy the ride. Every moment that you're walking this earth, I mean, literally, it's sacred ground under your feet. If your mind is in the right place and your heart is in the right place, it doesn't matter what you do, you know, be present in every moment and present with everyone you meet.
Well, without further ado, Donna, I want to thank you so much for
thank you, Tony.
Spending
this
time
great.
With us.
I love you, and this is like the longest we've talked in a long time.
I know, and we have it all on tape, and you can go back to it over and over again as an archive.
Yay.
So this is Enjoy the Ride. You're listening to Donna Madolvin. And
that's Back to the Garden is the name of the group, by the way. So
Back to the Garden.
Duo, we call it Back to the Garden, yeah.
And if you're listening to this, you can look right there on the website, and you can see that I posted a link so you can actually find Donna and find out what she's doing. So, Donna, thank you again. This is Back to the Garden with Enjoy the Ride.
Take a walk with me. I wanna see you smile. So come hang with me a while.
Hey, and that was Donna Madolvin with Enjoy the Ride. The name of her band again is Back to the Garden. Great, great stuff. I'm so glad to see her out there recording some original material and making it all happen. Before we say goodbye, I'd like to send a song out to Donna. This is Reinvent Your Life. For all the things that she has been able to do in her life and changing, I think it's awesome. Keep the journey going. Reinvent Your Life by Saint Tone.
From a Hollywood dream, came into this world, girl, like a butterfly. Time to spread your wings and reinvent your life. Try so hard to raise the sun, give them unconditional love, break them up enough to leave the nest. Came into this world, girl, like a butterfly. If I the time to reinvent your life. Ooh, what are they gonna say? Those free to make a change. Oh, what you gonna do? What you gonna do? Are you happy with life? What you gonna say? What you gonna say? Make the wrong track. Time to rise up, time to rise up. Got three half five. Reinvent your life.